Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full, unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code futurecommerce for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce, rated as top five podcast for consumer brands by Bobsled Marketing. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
Today we have Greg Bilsland, Senior Communications Manager at Haptex. Really excited to have you on. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Thanks. Yeah, happy to be here. And thank you for pronouncing the name of the company right.
Yes. Well, I've been keeping track of you guys for a while and I'm excited to talk about you. But as always, you want to stay ahead of retail tech, subscribe to our FC Insiders newsletter today to get the data you need to stay ahead of the game. With that,
Where can they go subscribe there, Brian?
Oh, yeah. The most important place, the most important part of that statement, go to futurecommerce.fm and click on the subscribe now button, either at the top of your screen or in our menu, and get your email in there. And actually, I think Philip's got a nice little treat for new subscribers. We have a subscription success page, and you can listen to him say some stuff. And
Yeah. I love that Brian's generally impressed with any small low effort thing that I do these days. So I'm just going to keep those trickling out. And
well, okay. So I have to say though, I think that this success page or the subscription confirmation page is the only one I've ever seen that has audio in it. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now you have to go subscribe. Make sure you go to futurecommerce.fm if you want to hear that the ultra sexy dulcet tones of Philip Jackson coming down to welcome you to our email newsletter. We are so far off base today.
I know. I'm excited to subscribe now.
Shoot. Well, let's get this thing going.
All right. So for those of us who aren't engaged in this world, what is Haptex and what exactly do you guys do? And, you know, tell us a little about what your role is there and how are you enabling commerce?
Yeah, thanks, Philip. So Haptex is a startup and we're part of the virtual reality space. So we're working on peripherals for virtual reality. Although I call us a startup, it's kind of a bit of a misnomer because we've actually been around for about 5 years. Haptex was actually founded back in 2012 by a fellow named Jake Rubin, who at the time was 20. It's one of those things that kind of puts your life into a little bit of perspective. So he dropped out of college and founded the company because this was even before the Oculus Kickstarter. He saw this wave of virtual reality coming and he thought that there would be a need for devices that would actually give you a sense of touch in virtual reality. So while a lot of the other companies were focused on what you could see and hear, he had a vision for a full body haptic system that would deliver realistic touch to VR users. I joined the company just about 6 months ago. I was actually the second hire in the marketing department. So as senior communications manager, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, working on the website, PR, social media. Prior to that, I worked in project management and marketing for the Dungeons and Dragons brand for about a decade.
Wow. Well, those two things might be pretty compatible from an experiential point of view, right? That's Dungeons and Dragons or any sort of role playing game. Or if I have to channel my 13-year-old self now, but I remember it being a very immersive sort of, you know, feeling of sort of inhabiting this other world. And I guess that's kind of what you're doing now still in the virtual reality space.
Yeah, definitely. I would say Dungeons and Dragons is only limited by your imagination. And I think that the ultimate promise of virtual reality, both through haptics and through head-mounted displays, is to open up sort of impossible worlds, impossible experiences to you. So you can be a bird flying through the air, or you can go to fantasy worlds and experience them with unprecedented realism.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And it was actually at D&D that I had my first VR experience, which was really what got me interested. They had a simulator where you could play, sit around a table and play D&D in virtual reality. And I was like, this is the future.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you kind of mentioned, you know, what haptics is in a general sense. I would love to hear kind of a little bit more specific definition. I think there's different types of haptics and, we can go back to Dungeons and Dragons here in just a minute, but for our audience, maybe talk a little bit about the difference between symbolic and realistic haptics and what tactile feedback is, and all of that, you know, sort of like nitty gritty of haptics.
Yeah, I mean, so broadly speaking, haptics is the science and technology of touch. So it's understanding how our body interacts with all the things around us. But most people experience haptics in technology through things like the vibration in your phone or the touchpad in your mouse, or if you're a gamer, the rumble of your controller. Brian, you're of an age, you might remember what the N64 Rumble Pack controller?
Rumble Pack, yeah, you bet. Oh, yeah. That was a big deal.
Yep. So we like to point to that as sort of early haptics. And basically, that's just a motor. It's an off-center motor. It's called an eccentric rotating motor that spins around to create a vibrational effect. And we refer to that as symbolic haptics because it's only really representing something in an abstract way that's happening. So it's used for alerts, or if you're driving your Mario Kart with your N64 controller, you crash and it might rumble, but you don't really feel yourself like bumping into something. It just rumbles. Versus realistic feedback, realistic haptics is something that we like to talk about because it is what delivers that actual sense of displacement that you get on your skin when you touch something. And it's kind of a hard thing to actually describe without showing you. But if you imagine like a fork that you put your finger against the tines of that fork, and you see all those points on your finger that are physically displacing, that's where you're actually feeling those points. That's tactile feedback. And sort of a corollary to that is force feedback, which if you imagine a spoon that you're trying to bend and you're pushing against it, you're feeling resistance. And when you combine those two things, force feedback and tactile feedback, what you get is realistic haptics, a sense that you're actually touching a real object, even though you're in the virtual world.
Wow.
Wow.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Very rarely do you get both of us out of things to say. So there's a lot there. My question would be, this seems like a far future technology, but you're talking about it like it's a current right now thing. So tell me a little bit about, you know, where the technologies come from and what its current uses and practical uses are.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because the Ready Player One trailer just dropped and it's a game or it's a movie that's going to really popularize, I think, virtual reality and haptics. And it was supposed to be kind of this distant vision of the future. But what Jake, our founder, really realized is that you could leverage a lot of the existing game engine technology out there, Unity and Unreal. And these virtual environments have all these physical properties associated with them. So while this initially started with kind of a vision about how to do realistic environments within games and deliver touch in those games, it turns out that it has huge implications across commerce and retail and training, because if you imagine like a flight simulator, flight simulators have been around for 20, 30, 40 years. And right now they're done through the CAVE technology, which is done through like projection on a bunch of screens. And they're done with these big $10, $20 million devices. With VR, once you have a VR headset, you can create the environment that looks real, but you need to be able to touch it as well to be able to train accurately. You don't want a fighter pilot who has only trained on game controllers, for example. You want them to be able to, to train realistically with the objects they're actually going to use. So having a set of gloves, realistic haptic gloves that can deliver that experience really is essential to training. There's a whole bunch of other use cases I can touch on, but if you just imagine that scenario for the fighter pilot applying to almost any professional role that requires training, you can kind of see the implications this has really across VR and use cases.
So my sense is that there are likely, it doesn't matter what technology it is, right? There's always an application somewhere. So right now we're seeing Internet of Things like IoT type technology being used in engineering applications and in manufacturing, even in things like, you know, oil supply pipelines and analytics for, you know, manufacturing businesses. And it's just crazy where that's being worked in. So there must be some sort of a broad, you know, industry specific use of this type of technology. Is there anything like that that's currently in existence? And then how do you see that being applied in the consumer space?
Yeah. So you mean specifically around haptics versus virtual reality?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that when we look long-term at haptics, haptic devices, they are going to make their way into the consumer space because I think virtual reality will be sort of a part of retail, the retail shopping experience ultimately. But just to be clear, like our technology, we see it more as an enterprise tool in the short term. You know, there's a lot of companies that are already starting to do like a lot of retail training. Striver is a company that is partnered with Walmart to train its workforce. I think that when I think about what are the companies, the retail companies, the companies doing commerce that are going to benefit the most from a haptic technology, it's really anywhere where there's a company that has a large physical space or a large where consumers do their shopping, or a large physical space where they have to store everything. So when you think about a company like Lowe's or Home Depot, huge stores, very expensive to lease the space, to keep it stocked. And these are companies that are looking at virtual reality as an area where they can reduce that footprint by allowing people to customize their spaces, to design their homes within the store, and then have the kind of the store, the whole store experience brought to them in a compact package. IKEA is doing actually the same thing. They've been building out things. So I think that to kind of get back to your question, initially, we're going to see a lot more consumers interacting with VR and particularly haptics when they're at locations that can install VR and haptic systems. Just because the consumer, you have to kind of create the use case for the consumer before they're ready to bring that back home and understand how right. that's actually going to be of value to them.
Wow, that's amazing. I want to dive into that a little bit more. In a perfect world, how do you see, you know, a retail company applying haptic technology? Like, or not perfect world, but I should say sort of end game, how do you see retail applying haptics? Is it just training, or is it just sort of some of the experience you described for consumers to sort of build their homes and so on? I was just thinking about it. Like you could also and maybe you were already kind of referring to this, but maybe I'm still kind of getting my brain around this. but like I could see Home Depot or Lowe's putting out some sort of a training program where someone comes in with haptic technology and uses haptic technology to do sort of like a, you know, DIY training and really get a feel for what it would be like to use a specific tool before they go out to the field and use it. Is that basically what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like a forklift driver or something like
No, I mean, I was thinking like if someone goes to Lowe's, I was talking about even on a consumer end, where like someone comes into a store, they want to rent a jackhammer, and you're like, okay, here's our training course for a jackhammer. And you put them in VR and you give them, you know, give them haptic gloves, and then they feel what it's like to hold a jackhammer in their hands. And that's actually required that they do that before they rent that tech or that tool.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Brian, that kind of application, you know, has immediate implications for the user. And in kind of going to that earlier point I was making about game controllers, that's not something that you can ever experience realistically with just a set of game controllers. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason for the need for realistic haptics for a set of gloves is to be able to train in a way that actually feels intuitive, because you know, I hand a game controller to my mom and she's not going to know, you know, what the heck to do with it. I ask her to use her hands. Well, she's had, you know, 60 odd years of using them and is actually pretty good at using them. So they're the tool you're born with and that you're probably most adept at using. So I do want to make a point though, like I do think there is an implication long-term or a use case long-term for consumers to have at-home haptic devices. It is still kind of part of our long-term vision, but it's not something that we see as very immediate. And that is because people are going to want to be able to do things like the training courses I've described. They're going to want to be able to navigate immersive environments and entertainment at home through using their hands versus a controller. But, we're at a long way off before price point makes that actually a feasible scenario.
So are you allowed to disclose price point right now? And I believe you also just recently released a product. So maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I'll say what I can about kind of the rollout. We just announced Haptex Gloves. So that's our first product. And we would like to say that it's really the first haptic glove to deliver realistic feedback, powerful force feedback, as well as precise motion tracking, kind of all in one package. There are other haptic devices out there. Many of them just rely solely on vibration. And we're actually going to be just try to do a quick, like kind of promo. We are going to be sharing that at Sundance in a few weeks. Oh, wow. That's our actually first public demonstration. And it's, the first hardware product to actually debut at Sundance since Oculus. So we're really excited about that. But you know, in the immediate term, we have a very limited number of these devices that we're really making available to select enterprise partners, strategic investors. And that's because we see the whole VR ecosystem as a marathon and not a sprint. Mm. Enterprise adoption is going to drive a lot of the technology and the development, but all the customers say, you know, they see all of these use case opportunities for the haptics, but particularly in the training area, which is why I've kind of been talking about that in the context of commerce.
Mm. One thing I would just kind of connect the dots on, we made a prediction in our last episode, episode 55, that because of the cost of a lot of emerging tech, that a lot of retailers are going to have to sort of pool resources or share through services like One Market, which was a spin out of Westfield. Which, by the way, Philip, we didn't talk about Westfield getting acquired. That's something we should probably
cover. That's a whole separate can of worms. Yeah. My word.
Essentially, One Market's a network, a way for brands and retailers to be able to leverage data and tech together and share that experience. And there are other stories coming out about this. CMO at Magento just posted something about this recently, Bloomberg article on this. In short, I could see this being something that, like, you know, it sits in like an experience room in a mall or something like that. And then you can like pull up different brand experiences. And maybe there's some sort of sharing that happens. And really there are just different modules that are associated with using a single device, at least until the price point comes down. Do you see that maybe being a future kind of, and I hate to put it in these terms, but kind of an arcade sort of feel to it because of the costs associated with the tech?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there. You know, we see location-based entertainment Which would include VR arcades, which will frequently probably be at malls, as well as more experiential centers like The Void, being big use cases for us. And so I think that entertainment actually is going to be a way that consumers will experience a lot of the haptic devices. But I like the point that you make about branded experiences, because I think that right now when I look at what brands are doing VR right, it's companies like Disney, which recently partnered with Nissan to do a Star Wars experience. And these are entertainment experiences, or they could be training experiences at VR locations that create a real sense of value among the consumer, because you're delivering utility. I like to call to this, there's this great app or this application that somebody did when ARKit first came out that was a measurement tool. And it was just a simple measurement tool. But if you're Home Depot, wouldn't it be great to have an augmented reality app that's just a measuring tape that, you know, all of your customers are using, because it creates a touch point for that brand. And so bringing it back around to what you're saying, I think that, you know, experience centers, whatever you want to call them, at malls and in cities are going to be initially a major way that consumers are going to be interacting with this technology, both VR and AR, as well as more emergent technologies like haptics.
Now it's time for our weekly segment called Future Policy, brought to you by Vertex SMB. And as always, we're joined by former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Danny Sepulveda.
This is the central struggle of what the next leader of our country is going to have to propose. You have to have a message that is one of economics and opportunity that people will understand and embrace if my party's ever going to be in power again. And you know what? President Trump made a proposal about economics. His fundamental proposal was you essentially close the borders off to competition, you close the borders off to people entering and taking jobs from you, and you do something on the tax side to put more money in individual people's pockets. Go. And he's executed on that. I don't believe that's the right solution, so we have to come up with an alternative solution. I believe in open markets. I believe in the free flow of ideas and people and information. And I believe that it's worked well on net. But at the same time, I've read two books in the last year that have deeply affected me. One is Ta-Nehisi Coates's Between the World and Me, and the other is J.D. Vance's The Hillbilly Elegy. And J.D. Vance is borderline famous because of this book, because it theoretically explains to those of us who don't live in Appalachia why Appalachia is where it is economically today. And that's a situation in which you see what happens when not just low-wage jobs, but when entire means of production shut down. It's not just that you lose the low-wage jobs within that means of production, is you lose the leadership and sense of community that people have from belonging to something larger than themselves that they're proud of producing, right? And that, when you have a whole community sustained only essentially by welfare payments and low-wage jobs, as opposed to a production mechanism within that community, it destroys the fiber and nature of a community. And you see this as well in the other book that I mentioned, which is Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, which is a letter to his son about what it means to be Black in America, what it was like to grow up in Baltimore, in the poor side of Baltimore, and what that meant for how you felt about yourself. The reason these issues are important is not really because of the technology. It's not really because, you know, you can have PhDs debating with each other. It's because these decisions that we make for economics and commerce don't occur on their own. They occur within the four corners of law and human ingenuity and regulation. How we react to how commerce is changing fundamentally affects the manner in which human beings live in their communities, govern themselves, and view themselves, right? So as we look to communities in Appalachia, or as we look to inner city communities, or as we look now to places like where my wife grew up, which is in Binghamton, New York, which has a SUNY Binghamton there, But it used to be a place where IBM was headquartered and there were tons of other kinds of jobs, and it's not a happy place. We are having centers of production, wealth, and commerce concentrating in specific places and the rest of the country living off of it. And that is unsustainable. The fundamental problem here is that it's unsustainable because of what it means to the American promise. The American promise is that birth is not destiny. You are born and then all men are created equal, not in the sense that we all actually have equal abilities. The goal is to have all men be created equal in the sense that you all have a relatively equal opportunity to make the most of yourself. Once birth becomes destiny, once social mobility has been on a dramatic decline since the 1970s, that is not the American promise. That's the fundamental problem. And there are a whole host of public policy solutions to that. There are also market solutions to that. These were things that we talked about before. But as we move forward, I think one of the recurring themes you're going to hear in our conversations is this debate and concern about the concentration of power, wealth, and authority, and what that means in everyday people's lives.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries for every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce.
It's interesting because if you follow this sort of like one of those idioms where if you watch progress in reverse, right? So if we watch video games in the history of video game entertainment in reverse, you have these like sort of really sophisticated sort of at home only experiences, sort of working backwards and converging towards more social experiences and malls with less sophisticated, but more highly social experiences where people get together and they're actually in the same place. Is there any, and not that you have to be the VR apologist, but do you see could you address any critics that might say that this continues to sort of further isolate people from having real world experiences? And how does that play towards what we keep being told about millennial consumers who want experience over anything else? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I'll first kind of tackle the social side of that. From our perspective, haptics ultimately have the ability to bridge distance and bring touch to what would normally be a very isolating experience. So imagine being able to Skype somebody, but instead of, you're going to Skype your parents and you want to be able to give them a hug or hold their hand. That's a thing you could actually do with haptics. And it would feel fairly realistic with haptics gloves. Mm-hmm. But, I take the point that these there's a fear that immersive environments will further isolate them. I don't think that's a trajectory that necessarily, the criticism has always been there that, first it's, you know, TV that's going to rot our brains, and it's video games. Sure. Now it could be VR. And there's no, it kind of depends on the content makers and their users to discipline themselves and how they use that technology. Going back to the Dungeons and Dragons thing, I still love sitting around a table with my friends and rolling dice. It's not going to necessarily stop me though from having a Dungeons and Dragons VR experience when I can't necessarily get together with those people because we all have busy lives. Hmm. So in that way, it helps us bridge that distance.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. In that, you know, I think back when I was a kid, actually, I feel like game experiences were more isolating. They were more single player. They were more, you know, without interaction. And as I got older, and you know, was a teenager and going into college, actually, gaming experiences were a lot more connecting. And so, I think the more realistic that we can make them, and the more they mimic the real world, I think the closer to sort of a real world experience that we'll be able to have. And hopefully that will actually sort of take away the isolation, not enhance it. I totally agree with that. One of the things you mentioned, and let's dwell this for one second. You mentioned entertainment being the biggest, you know, maybe the first point of entry for haptics, or at least one of the biggest ways that consumers will interact with it. That, you know, and then you mentioned the Disney Nissan partnership. That really makes me feel like this is going to be, haptics are going to be something that CMOs should be paying attention to now, because, you know, when you're building out branded experiences and doing storytelling, I mean, to me, this seems like one of the ultimate tools for storytelling. Touch is something that we've been missing from media for so long. Like, this is kind of an ultimate goal, if you will, is to add touch to storytelling in a digital world. Do you kind of see, how do you foresee CMOs and marketers being able to you know, build out different brand experiences with this?
Yeah. So, and I think right now VR is still a novelty for a lot of consumers, and so they will try these experiences and be wowed by them, and suddenly they'll have this really strong like brand impression. And I think that's why you see a lot of these big brands trying to create VR experiences. But eventually consumers will kind of become savvy to that. They'll have tried enough VR experiences that they'll recognize the good ones from the bad ones. And it's at that point that I think marketers, whether you're doing a pop-up or you're doing an event at a conference, or you have an installation at a mall or your store, are going to want a deeper level of immersion, because it's going to be that competitive edge that's going to give your store, your experience, more over the experience that only lets you have sight and sound, or forces you to hold a set of controllers. Imagine going to REI and being able to, you know, try on some of the gear and then like ascend Mount Rainier, like compared to an experience where you would just put on a headset and not be able to touch the mountain, not be able to, you know, feel yourself kind of climbing it. You can see how immersion helps sell the experience.
Yeah, that's good. I don't want to, you know, give away before you do your first public launch here of your product, but like, how much can you feel? I mean, like, I was telling a friend of mine about this, and he's like, "So, can you feel something slimy?" And I'm like, I'm like, I have no idea. Like, can you feel weights? Can you feel texture? What can you feel?
Okay, so slimy is hard, and really textures in general are challenging, simply because they're really a function of vibration. So when you run your hand over something, that's your hand actually sort of vibrating at various frequencies. And that is something that we're working on, getting the actuator technology. Actuators are basically these little You think of them as almost as little bubbles in the textile that we have that are able to inflate and deflate. And if you inflate and deflate them fast enough, it actually creates a sensation of texture. So slime probably a little ways off, but being able to run your hands through wheat or over a rocky surface or even over just a wall, we can do that pretty darn well. And it's really improving by leaps and bounds every month.
Wow.
As for weight, weight is an interesting challenge because we do have force feedback that lets you feel the resistance of grabbing something. But to feel something that's truly weighty, like if you were to hold out your arm and hold a 5-pound weight, you need a full body exoskeleton to actually apply that pressure mm-hmm. downward on your arm.
And so is that sort of the ultimate goal of, are you headed out towards full body suits? And you know, what do you see as sort of the ultimate vision for the company?
Yeah, definitely. We started with a vision of full body suits and that remains. Although in that time, we've really found that our expertise is in touch. It's in translating the digital into a tactile experience. There are a lot of other companies that are doing really awesome exoskeleton work out there. So while we've developed an exoskeleton system for our glove, we figure long-term training, if you imagine you want to like give people reinforced exoskeletons or you want to give them a true, fully immersive experience, you know, what it's like to climb that mountain, for example, that's where we would probably partner with a company that's able to do that exoskeleton side of things.
Cool.
Yeah, I was going to actually elaborate on that a bit because if you think about what actually, you know, weight or kind of translates to, it has a lot to do with balance, right? So you're not just holding an object in your hands. So you know, your back is compensating. Your center of gravity is you shift your body's position so that you can, you know, recenter your gravity center so that you can hold it in space. It's this interesting full body feeling. And I didn't even think about that until you said it that way. So I guess my next question would be, does haptics add to the illusion of, well, what do they call it, Brian? Is it presence or
verisimilitude?
What is the
presence? Yeah.
Does it add to the presence illusion? Does it take it away? With you know, real high end VR, because you know it's sort of, does it trick you into feeling like it's a more immersive experience?
I'm from the haptics company. I think so. Although you know, I'll say. There's a lot of progress to be made. And while we've been able to simulate touch better than any other haptics company before, it's going to take time because you think about when people watched when they watched black and white television.
Yeah.
It was great. This is amazing. And then we got color television and suddenly the black and white television, was no longer as engrossing. It was no longer interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. And then we got higher and higher definition television and our standards for lower resolution moved and we were no longer willing to watch those lower resolutions. So it's always kind of a moving, the goalpost is always moving. And I think that's just kind of the nature of this emergent technology is we're going to work to kind of to keep up with the standards of immersion in what you can hear and see, but being that this is still such a nascent technology, it's probably going to seem, a little jarring at first. But at the same time, it's jarring to hold a controller while you're trying to climb a mountain or you're trying to, learn to do a flight simulator. So,
yeah, I agree with that. Honestly, that's one of my least favorite things about VR right now is holding the controller. It's really annoying. And like movement in general is annoying.
I had one last little thing there too, because I'm sort of wrapping my mind around this. I don't have VR at home personally, so it's still very much a kind of a novel experience. But my next question really would be around what I think retailers are starting to just come into the understanding that there are different types of user interfaces that can only be realized in certain mediums. So voice UIs are starting to be understood as having a particular sort of that user experience have techniques and approaches in the way that you organize information and the way that you engage your users that only work in that medium. So I would have to assume that you are enabling user interfaces in VR, maybe AR too, maybe we'll get there in a second, but you're enabling new experiences and interfaces that couldn't otherwise be realized.
Yeah, very much so. We've talked to companies like NVIDIA who released this holodeck program that was essentially a program for in which you could kind of create 3D models in a realistic way. And and you look at existing kind of CAD and CAM programs that right now when we design for those, we're designing on a two-dimensional screen using a keyboard and mouse. And how is that a good way to design three-dimensional objects?
Sure.
To the point of what are the use cases for haptics for this new generation of interfaces, I think that it's being able to use your hands in an immersive environment to interact with three-dimensional objects in a way that, again, feels intuitive as compared to using a bunch of clicky keys and a mouse that doesn't actually really correspond realistically to what you're working on or how you're interfacing with that virtual environment.
This is a little off subject, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but have you looked at applying to the medical community at all as well?
Yeah, we have. We've had a number of universities and medical research companies that have reached out to us because going back to that, especially the training side of things, there are training devices out there like the Da Vinci Surgical System that do kind of some amount of force feedback and touch feedback, but you're still kind of having to work within the parameters of this device that you're holding. And if you think about if you go into surgery in the future and your doctor has already actually performed that surgery on you using a virtual environment and virtual tools, like, wouldn't you feel more comfortable having that doctor do that operation?
Yeah, that's amazing.
I know I would. Oh, it's interesting. I have a friend who is an anesthesiologist and says that big data is such a sort of a boon in the healthcare space because there's so many, it's even being brought out in malpractice suits in discovery now that you can actually see how long your doctor actually looked at your CAT scan. And it's like, well, you only looked at it for 8 seconds and then you typed X, Y, and Z into Google and WebMD. Did you really provide this patient with enough care to make that decision about, you know, their healthcare? And it's interesting how it's bringing a lot of this stuff to light and it's bringing to bear really the expertise that are around things like our personal healthcare. That's more data is always better. Having more information is always better. Sometimes it's sort of shocking what comes out in the end. So yes, I would prefer to know and sort of get the text message alert that my doctor just completed my faux surgery, my little fake run through, and everything came out fine, and then I'm good in the end, you know.
So let me get into one more thing, and then we'll probably need to wrap it up here shortly. But what about haptics and augmented reality? I feel like in retail, augmented reality is becoming rapidly adopted. And at least within certain segments of retail. And so, I'm curious to see, like, do you see application with augmented reality? And if so, what?
Yeah. Haptics and AR are compatible. But it's a much bigger technical challenge due to the way that most augmented reality hardware works. So the head mounted displays that augmented reality use, they use a kind of inside out tracking. What that essentially is it's, I'm no engineer, but it essentially takes a lot of snapshots of the environment and then uses some complicated math to tell relative position of the device so that an object can remain kind of locked in the virtual environment. Where that gets tricky as compared to virtual reality, which is uses an external tracking system for the most part, is that haptics requires a really high level of precision to be able to deliver a realistic experience. So if you're going to reach out your hand and you're going to poke at a button, you need that button to push back against you at precisely where you see that button. Otherwise, it's going to feel wrong. So you actually have to have like sub-millimeter accuracy to make that work. And AR just isn't quite there with the tracking yet. There are some really great systems, but really until we hear a lot of customers like demanding haptics for AR, it's not something we're going to focus on.
Good to know. Philip, do you have any remaining questions? Otherwise, I'm going to kind of ask our typical ending questions here.
No real questions left. I'm just shocked at, you know, every day, and we talk about the future all the time on the show. It's like, it's in the stinking name of the show, actually. But the it's funny how much the future is actually right now, because in my mind, this is something that just should not exist. It's like, it's, you know, what's next? I'm going to find out that like anti-gravity rooms exist. I'm constantly shocked at the level of technological advancement and how it's being applied in all kinds of interesting ways. And to see something like this that might be available in a consumer market pretty soon and already has broad applications in industry is impressive. And so thanks for sharing it with us, Greg, and wish you guys the best of luck. It's amazing.
Before we go, do you have any advice to our merchant listeners about when, you know, when they should be investing in this? You know, is there anything they should be doing in this coming year? Maybe even broadly speaking about VR, since you know quite a bit about VR. And you know, what should they avoid? What should they hold off on? And then what about the next 5 years? What should they be prepared for?
Yeah. So, you know, as I said, VR is still a novelty for most consumers. And for a while, I think merchants are going to be able to capitalize on that to create experiences that are memorable. But I think that we're also looking at an adoption curve for VR that's more like, and to some extent AR, but more VR, that's more like the cell phones of like the mid-90s rather than the smartphone. I don't think we're going to turn around and 5 years from now, 90% of Americans are going to have VR headsets. So I think it, you know, it always comes down to just like thinking about your business and how you're solving your consumers' problems. So if you're in the travel industry, people want to know more about their trip. They want more information. And so giving them a 360 or VR experience might make sense to solve that problem for them. But that's not going to be true of every industry. So, you know, as I mentioned, like I think the branded AR and VR experiences are going to have a real long tail for brands and merchants who invest in delivering utility and value to their customers. Then, you know, the longer term outlook of like 5 years out from now, it's a matter of thinking about how haptics and VR are going to apply to how you train your workforce and how you're designing products. Using the new tools of virtual reality and haptics to build prototypes, CAM and CAD software, and 3D engines like Unity and Unreal. So hopefully that's a lot to chew on. Look at what the big companies are doing. If they're not investing in VR and AR and they're of a similar industry as you, it might not be the right time yet to take that dive in to it.
Good advice. Well,
wow. And actually someone for once that actually gives like, you know, honest advice about when you should be making strategic investments for your company. You know, that's awesome. And I think that carries weight with, our audience. I think if you're interested in VR now, then you're ahead of the curve, because I think what typically happens with technologies is that you have sort of the adoption curve. You have people that are late to the game and miss an opportunity because they're just, they have a curmudgeon sort of attitude about it for longer than the market will bear. So the adoption curve on these things is probably lengthy.
It is, but it's all coming, and it really is a matter of time. I think immersive computing and wearable computing is going to be the next wave of technological adoption. And so it's worth paying attention to, even if it doesn't necessarily match your business right now.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. That was great. Well, thank you so much, Greg. That was a ton of information for our listeners. I think they're really going to appreciate that. And thanks for talking with us today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and I hope I didn't overwhelm them with too many acronyms and technical terms.
That's great. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Greg Bilsland. And of course, the company is haptx.com, haptx.com, where you can find all of our social media accounts.
Great. Well, thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We want you to give us feedback about today's show. So please leave us some feedback in this guest comment box below in our website. If you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, I always love that 5-star review and any other feedback you want to provide us in any channel that you can find us, Twitter, LinkedIn, text message, whatever. You can always subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or listen right now from your Amazon Echo device with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcasts. With that, retail tech is moving fast.
Future Commerce is moving faster. Thank you.